You knew the answer.
Yes, we are here for the clue. We understand you have it.
I have been waiting for you nearly my whole life, but I cannot help you. Only Janelle can.
The original host? Didn't he die hundreds of years ago?
Janelle joined with our symbiont so that it could carry his secrets across the ages until a worthy seeker arrived.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and join me on the Trill Planet.
This is Tyler Orton, breaking the ice. Cam, that's a human idiom.
And we're here this week to talk about Episode 3 of Season 5 Discovery, Janal. But before we get there, Tyler, I think there's some like minor Star Trek news we should talk about.
I would say it's a little bit more than minor. Kind of a good news, bad news situation in which we have confirmation that Strange New Worlds will be returning for a fourth season. It's currently in production for its third season right now. I'm very excited to see what comes next. Unfortunately, though, we did find out last week that Lower Decks will be concluding with its fifth and final season, which I think we can expect to premiere a little later on this year. I go back and forth, not about my disappointment that Lower Decks will not be with us for that much longer, but just thinking about kind of the economics of it all. And I think if you look at how streaming services run, there's very few shows that go beyond, you know, three or four seasons. So I think the fact is, you know, we got seasons 1, 2, 3 of Picard. We're getting 5 seasons of Discovery, mm-hmm. 5 seasons of Lower Decks. The thing I'm wondering now, Cam, is how many seasons of Strange New Worlds do you think we might eventually end up getting?
I think 5 sounds like a pretty solid number.
That disappoints me if that's what we end up getting. But I think that's just kind of the business model of streaming shows from Netflix to Amazon Prime to Paramount Plus.
What's really interesting to me is that, okay, Picard ended, right? And Discovery is ending. Oh, and now Lower Decks is ending. And Strange New Worlds has a couple more seasons to go, we think. But like, Prodigy has been kicked over to Netflix.
Vimeo.
Vimeo. Tubi. That's where Prodigy's gone. So at this point, really, Strange New Worlds is the only vibrant ongoing show they have over on Paramount, except for the Starfleet Academy show that is in some sort of state of set building or something along those lines. It's a little vague still.
They're not building sets. They have an outline for a set.
Outline for the set. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
the show has not actually been picked up. It's just They're like far into development. So the only thing that we have for certainty moving forward is Prodigy on, you know, season 2 of Prodigy on Netflix.
Yep.
An upcoming season of Lower Decks and 2 more seasons of Strange New Worlds. And then it looks as if their priority is Starfleet Academy. We also know we are getting a Section 31 film. Mm-hmm. Here's the other backdrop that I think we need to keep in mind. Right now, Paramount is in the process of trying to get acquired. The most likely bidder is Skydance. And I don't know. It's like, do you know how you make yourself like a better acquisition target? Like you cut costs. Paramount has done a lot of layoffs recently. I just don't know if it makes sense for them to announce like these big high priced sorts of television shows beyond but giving the green light to Academy. I mean, I don't know, that hasn't actually happened yet, so mm-hmm. I don't know, the whole thing, I just think that there's this a lot of uncertainty surrounding the Star Trek franchise right now. But Cam, I'll say the last 7 years we've been given a lot more content to work with than we were the first couple of years of this podcast here.
Well, it's so insane. You know, we started in 2017 starting to cover Star Trek Discovery on the show, and then more and more shows were added, and now we are seeing all those shows say goodbye, and we're like, wait, what about us? We're still here.
Yeah. I mean, there's another movie in the works. add that to the pile of 12 other movies that have been in various sorts of production stages here, but I don't know, I guess Paramount, we talked about it a few weeks ago, but Paramount has officially slated that other Star Trek movie where it's going to be about the origins of Star Trek, whatever the heck that means, but it's going to take place, what they're saying is like decades prior to the first JJ movie. So again, I just keep going back to what I was saying a few weeks ago. It's like, it sounds more likely than not, or well, no, it sounds like more of like not an origins of Star Trek film, but maybe more origins of the Federation sort of film. And you know, I think the action pack kicking off point for that would be kind of Earth Romulan War, and it's kind of, we're deprived of that in the fifth season of Enterprise. So I don't know, I mean, look, give us a film, but I don't know if I'm that excited for like at 2 hour, you know, Earth Romulan War. I'm not saying that's what it is, I'm just saying in my head that kind of what makes the most sense at this point. But I don't know, I just, big screen Star Trek hasn't always been the best mix, and so I'm not exactly excited about yet another announcement of a Star Trek film.
The one movie concept I'm wondering about, and I'm not like saying that I think this is what it's going to be, but do you remember back in the day they talked about how they were going to make the Khan spinoff TV show?
Yes.
And then it just never really happened. And then like they percolated around it, and then they announced there's going to be a radio drama. We're going to turn that into a radio drama or a podcast drama.
I'm sorry.
Radio, yeah, podcast drama.
A radio drama? Well, certainly. And then are you getting like the putting like coffee beans to make it sound like rain or something like that? What year are you living in? Seriously, listeners, I am embarrassed. This man, I swear to God, he was not born in 1922. I promise you that, listeners. A radio drama. A radio drama. Dear Lord.
A podcast drama. And
nobody calls it a podcast drama. They're called podcasts.
Whatever. On. Anyways, that show never happened. It's podcast never come drama. Out. And the thing is, if you're making like a Star Trek film for a general audience, I'm not talking about Star Trek, you know, people, a general audience, you want a hook that you can market something, just something to people that says Star Trek. And they seem very confident in Khan, given the way they marketed Into Darkness in a weird way.
Did they? I don't know.
Well.
They weren't marketing Khan, though. That was a problem.
Yeah. Could this be the film built around Khan? That is sort of like the origins of the Federation and where that kind of came from.
No. What would be the premise? Tell me what the premise would be.
World War III with Khan as a warlord.
No. What does that have to do with Star Trek, though?
Does the general audience really care? Like, if you build something that feels maybe a little almost like Mad Max.
So let me tell you, you brought up World War III a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You're not trekking through the stars. It's a World War. Why not just make a World War III movie, you know, period? What does it have to do with Star Trek?
Well, because you would then, that's the way they do things now. They smuggle concepts under known IP, and you would just slap it as Star Trek and do your World War III post-apocalyptic, you know, Khan film.
It has nothing to do with like being in the stars or anything. It would take place entirely on Earth. This says it's a Star Trek origin film. Like that to me, and when you say decades before the 2009 film, we're talking centuries before the 2009 film. So I say there's absolutely zero probability of this being a Third World War film.
Okay.
Featuring Khan.
I'm not saying that I'm betting on it. I just want to get it out there. If I'm right, hey, it's on the recording and we can go back to it. If I'm wrong, whatever. No.
If you're wrong, it's on the recording and I will play this back to you again and again and again, just as I'll be making fun of your radio drama talk for much of the rest of this podcast.
The one thing that I always go back to is that like they tend to hold on to ideas. Like the Starfleet Academy has been something they obsessed over for a long time and were looking to develop way back in the 90s. They just never let go of these ideas, and the Khan thing was always kind of floating around.
Okay. I say anything is possible. I think the probability of this is minuscule. It doesn't really have anything to do with Star Trek. And I think if you're marketing Star Trek, you need to be on a spaceship. And this would just be a third world war film. And I just like, yeah. And the thing is, like, it's like, are we then combining the eugenics wars with the Third World War? You know, those are separated by, and I know the timeline's gotten a little messy,
yeah,
over the years, but I mean, then we were smashing things together that would have been like 50 years apart in Star Trek canon.
Yeah, I mean, the timeline as kind of established by Strange New Worlds now has me a little confused as in terms of con.
Okay, so you're on the record, wanting to put this out there, saying it's possible. I'm putting this out there saying it is incredibly improbable. So,
okay.
Alrighty, Cam.
We'll find out.
Yes, we will. We will find out that you're wrong soon enough.
I was right about Picard season 3, damn it.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Okay, so I think that kind of wraps up the news segment. But Tyler, let's get to the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery.
This is episode 3, season 5. It's called Janal. It is directed by one, and I'm going to stumble with this name, Andy Armoganian, and written by one Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson. And Cam, yeah, we kick things off with, you know, Connection. Cam, have you ever heard of Connection in Discovery?
No more.
You know, I just want to let you know, Cam, Burnham and Rayner, you know, they get to meeting early on in this episode. Of course, there's the big exposition dump in which, you know, Cleveland Booker and Hugh Culber are doing the walk and talk with Burnham. We're having to reset, or I should say restack, the whole like Trill stuff that we left off with towards the end of the last episode. Here's the problem with this, though, is like they're restacking all the stuff, but they just showed us like a recap. And
yeah,
it's a little difficult when like it's kind of like how you write television like way back in the 90s when people weren't necessarily tuning in every single week. But now when you have like recaps before the start of the episode, it just feels like kind of like a real like flat-footed way to get things going again when you are kicking it off with like this big exposition dump about why they're traveling over to the Trill homeworld.
Yeah, and you have like that whole bit of Book being like, use me, I need to go. And I'm like, I feel like we kind of covered this ground in the last two episodes.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, haven't you guys already figured out, you know, oh man, we have different connections, you know, but I don't know. Like I'll say this. Well, overall, I still think that season 5 is off to a much better start than maybe the previous season was, you know, but, yeah. It's just, Discovery has all these kind of like tropes, like their own Discovery tropes that they keep kind of falling back on.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's a little frustrating, even though I think overall that this is kind of a better than average between seasons 3 and 4, better than average episode of Discovery. I think they just kind of keep things moving at a bit of a better pace, but there's still kind of that mystery box elements, you know. But I'm just so glad that they didn't leave the mystery of the Trill spots as we kick off the episode in engineering, you know, for, you know. In another season, this Trill spots mystery would have lasted like 3 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, the one thing that they seem to be kind of dragging out a little bit is Locke, because they say, nope, we don't know anything about Locke, but here's a little bit of exposition about Maul. And I'm like, okay. They keep telling us over and over again, we just don't know who this Locke is.
Yeah. We only got like a little, he just seems kind of like a clunkhead. So I'm not necessarily all that interested, even if they're trying to create this mystery. But the thing is, like, it's all very offhand remarks.
Yeah.
They're not trying to like beat you over the head with this. So yeah, I'm sure there's some sort of like, you know, I think like one of the screens, like when they're showcasing both of them, Maul and Locke, you know, like they're identifying their species. But like with Locke, it was just like a list of like unknown when it came to categories about like information about them. So like obviously he's supposed to be a bit of a mystery, not one that's particularly leaving me on the edge of my seat right now.
No. Okay. He is played by the actor who played one of the prisoners in episode 3, Context is for Kings. So maybe that's the reveal, that all along he's been that prisoner plotting from the background.
So this alien, look, he's actually human. It's just, this is how humans age in the far future, right?
radiation.
Yeah. Okay, so after this engineering sequence, we get over into Burnham and Rayner meeting. Okay, so Rayner is now a commander. He used to be a captain, so he was demoted to serve as XO aboard the Discovery. So why wasn't, like, Saru demoted last year when he served as XO aboard the Discovery, even though, like, he was a captain at the same time?
I don't have a good answer to that one. Is it because there was a little more of a disciplinary action with Rayner and Saru there wasn't?
For me, it's kind of a storytelling thing. Like, you don't want to cut, you know, Saru's development as a character out from underneath his legs, so you're going to leave him as a captain. But with Rayner, it's just like, well, we can't have this guy saying, well, I'm a captain too.
Yeah.
I'm a captain too. Like, so I think just the writer's like, okay, well, let's demote him down to commander. And so we can ensure that, you know, Burnham has, like, authority the entire time. Although, like, despite this, like, bridge sequence in which we're introduced to all of these bridge crew who we've never seen before.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, Christopher? Who's Christopher?
Okay, so, Kim, I would not have remembered Lieutenant Christopher. Like, he was in the last couple episodes of Discovery Season 4 because, remember, like, Commander Bryce went off to do that stuff with Dr. Kovich.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Well, exactly. And so I was going to say, I'm disappointed. It doesn't appear as if Bryce is ever coming back, but I'm like, what do I even care about Bryce? I know nothing about this guy. He was just a total cipher. So he was really just a familiar face, but it seems as if Commander Bryce is no longer on Discovery and he's been replaced by, you know, there's Lieutenant Christopher, Washakun and, Detmer, they were not in this episode. And so, I mean, I guess these are the cheap versions of them at the helm and all that. And there's a Lieutenant Gallo. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. Like, why are we as audience members supposed to care who these no names are? But like the music is swelling whenever we cut to them. And I don't know. It's tough for us to care about these like moments that Rayner has with these characters that we've only known for like 3 minutes, but I guess, I don't know, they're trying to introduce us to new bridge crew members, like the writers are, so that we get invested. I don't know, it's just a little weird to me, that's all.
What I found really weird too was like, I believe it's Burnham says to Rayner, like, oh, you'll meet Owashikin and Detmer later. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why later? And then they mention, I think it's a little later in the episode, but like, Nilsson's on Voyager now. And I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
Why? Is there a reason? Okay, whatever. I didn't really get that. I mean, I guess for whatever, probably professional reasons having nothing to do with the world of Star Trek Discovery, what's happening on screen, a lot of these actors have just moved on to other jobs and whatever. But it was weird to set them up just so you could basically have quick moments with Rayner later in the episode.
Yeah, you know, look, I get it. Like, these actors, they've been on the show for a while, and if they can get projects in which they're featured more prominently, good on them, you know. Mm-hmm. And in all fairness, like, with Bryce, they acknowledged, you know, late last season that he was off doing some sort of mystery mission with Kovich, and I don't really know what came of that. Nilsson's on Voyager. I'm like, okay. I don't know. So at least they are establishing, like, that we do have new crew members here. So,
yeah.
Okay. So then after that, we have Jet Reno and Paul Stamets talking about how Adira is going to be seeing gray for the first time in quite some time. You know, Paul Stamets, the adoptive father of this 34-year-old, is very confused at this very idea. I do like whenever Jet is on screen, I'll give that moments, you know, kind of a thumbs up overall, even though Stamets's obtuseness leaves me like kind of like stroking my chin a little bit. From there, we jump over to them jumping over to the Trill homeworld, and we're met by that Z, I believe his name, the Guardian Z. It sounds very much like Power Rangers or something like that. Again, Cam, I cannot tell you how much whenever I'm watching movies or TV shows and a character demands to know the answer to a riddle in order for you to progress further, I'm just like, okay, okay.
What does the fourth point?
Beta Z. Okay, well, come on down.
When the character said that, the blankness on my face watching the episode, because I'm like, this isn't something like, I did see like someone blurb just something like this season feels like people who play a lot of tabletop board games.
Okay.
Like applying that to TV. And I'm like, a moment like that, I feel like I should lean forward and be like, oh, what does that mean? But in this case, I'm just like, I have absolutely no idea what they're talking about.
It means nothing to me. And like, so I'm just like, I just give it the kind of big shrug of the shoulders, you know? So, but of course, Cam, Burnham knows all. She solved the mystery. She solved that riddle in, I would say, 4 seconds. Yeah. Like there was zero hesitation because she knows all. She's the smartest in the world.
I mean, this is definitely a little convoluted to be like, we need to introduce a riddle that is needed to talk to the person they need to talk to. And I'm like, come on. Like, come on.
Do you think we would not have ever, like, was there any tension about whether or not they'd actually get the riddle right? Well, no, because she got it correct in like 4 seconds. So it's just like, it was pointless, though.
And what happens if they don't know it? Then what?
Well, then the season's over. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, we're down on the Trill homeworlds in those caves. Caves look kind of cool, but then we have kind of I guess it's the Bix symbiont, here's the thing. Okay, you have this old lady. She's like, I've been waiting my whole life to meet you. But, like, the deal is, like, these Trill symbionts, like, this character could have been, like, a 25-year-old, and they could have still been like, I've been waiting, like, 900 years for this moment. But the thing is, they want to, like, I don't know, add some dramatic emphasis to this by casting like a senior citizen. I don't know. To me, it fell a little flat for me by casting like the senior citizen to illustrate how long this symbiont has been waiting for somebody worthy to come figure out the mystery riddle.
It felt to me big time like the old knight at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, okay.
Like has been waiting forever for this great, you know, prophecy and whatever else. These people are going to show up to find this this unique artifact or power. That's what it felt like to me. It's fine. But I think I was more distracted just like looking around the Trill homeworld. I'm like, oh man, this show, I like when it creates alien environments that are interesting to me as opposed to like some of the ones in past seasons where it's just kind of like murky looking sarcophagus ships or, you know, we've talked about the buzzsaw beetle planet.
Yeah, well, Cam, I don't want to spoil anything, but we do get to the generic-looking quarry that's been used about, I'd say, a dozen times on Star Trek Discovery, but that's a little later on. So, Cam, now we're back to Saru and Tarina. Saru is putting plants in his office. They're talking about when they're going to put out their engagement notice. I guess Facebook has made its way all the way to the 32nd century at this point. Good on you, Zuckerberg. I'm sure you're living in virtual reality somewhere at this point.
He's actually the host of that symbiont.
Yes, exactly. I got to go back to this. I just don't buy them as a couple. It does nothing for me. It feels like play acting. I like each individual character, but it just feels very convoluted to see them going through relationship struggles when one is the president of Navarre and the other is a newly minted ambassador. And it's like, it feels very sitcom-y when you have kind of the Soval-esque cranky Vulcan. And I like kind of cranky Vulcans. They're fun. But like when you have kind of the little like, semi-political operator there kind of getting in the way. And I'm just, and the thing is, like, he's like raising his eyebrow when Saru and Tarina are like walking together. And I'm just like, okay. Do you find Saru to be handsome and erudite?
I've said it since episode one of this, or I guess not episode one, the episode of Context is for Kings. He was in episode one.
Yeah.
Yes, I correct myself. Yes, he was in the premiere episode. Yes, so...
In all fairness, you did not know he was handsome because you were watching episode one as a radio drama, so you only heard his voice. You didn't actually see him until Context is for Kings.
But I imagined him as being handsome.
Exactly.
If that helps.
Yes. And irritating. Very irritating.
This section... I'm not going to say it was like a real rough sit for me. Like I like checking in with these characters. I'm more like just intrigued at where they're going with them because is this Saru's story this season? Like, are you telling me that I'm going to sit through episodes of Saru like talking about his impending nuptials and helping, you know, kind of trying to find a comfortable place for him and his wife in the political sphere.
Yeah.
Like, is that what this season is about? Because if so,
I think it might be.
Fast forward, because that is not particularly interesting. When I was watching Saru, you know, talk to that other Vulcan, raising his eyebrow, I'm like, really? Is this what we're doing with Saru this season? This may be weirder than kicking Tilly off the show last season.
Well, now I'm confused. Okay, so Tilly's no longer at the Academy. She's now back on Discovery because this mission is so important. But if this mission is so important, why isn't Saru sticking around on Discovery and just putting off his ambassadorship for a couple more weeks?
Wouldn't it have helped to have Saru working with Rayner to kind of help him into, you know, the first officer position on Discovery versus like Tilly coming back and, you know, throwing quips at him?
Yeah, that's why it just feels a little convoluted, whether it's Saru being off the ship, getting ready for his nuptials, or Tilly now being back on the ship when they made it such a big deal about her leaving the ship last season.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I just hope, because like Doug Jones is a great actor and Saru has been an up and down character on the show, but I really hope that the kind of the finale of his journey on the show isn't like a season of this. And obviously they'll tie it into something that happens in the overall arc of the season, but it's not particularly satisfying if it is like 9 episodes of Saru in an office.
Yeah. Okay, then we jump over to Tilly and Rayner getting to know each other. Rayner, I don't think the writers watched Picard season 3 and were like, we need our own Captain Shaw. I think this is a character developed independently of that. But I do like kind of that's like, do I really have to give an S about this crew's feelings and like meeting everybody one-on-one and walking around and like saying, how do you do? I am Commander Rayner, your new XO. Like, I appreciate where he just says to Tilly, like, why don't you just bring them to me? Like, that makes sense to me. But like the way the music's playing, the way it's directed, you're supposed to go like, ooh, this guy's a jerk.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do like the idea of putting him with Tilly, the character most likely to annoy him. That's kind of fun. But yeah, like I think, you know, so much of this episode, I don't know if you missed it, Tyler, was about connection.
What?
I know, right? I think like that's kind of the underlying thing is that he failed at connection in this episode and he will learn in the future because like if anything we've learned from Star Trek Discovery, this is a cheerleader crew. And Rayner, I think in this episode, it shows that he didn't necessarily understand the crew he would be working with.
Okay, I just want to point out that connection isn't a skill. It's a choice.
It's true.
Yeah. This is the crew in most need of reaffirmation and validation in all of Star Trek history, is it not?
There's nothing like it. There really isn't. And you know how the show has been like kind of all over the place because of, you know, mix-ups behind the scenes and creative reorganizing and all that sort of thing? I feel like they at a certain point they were like, this show, we understand it's kind of in chaos a lot of the time. We need to hone in on the word connection and just keep telling people that's what this entire series is about.
Well, it's the thing that we've always been complaining about. It's about tell, don't show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of connection, we are back on the Trill home planet. And I think for the first time ever, we see Adira and Gray hug each other, like have physical contact. They embrace. They're like, okay, well, you know, it's been a while. Let's talk. How did you feel about the reunion of these two?
Well, it's not a relationship that I was particularly won over by the way it was handled in the past seasons. It just never... I mean, Discovery's botched a lot of relationships. Theirs is, not really special in that regard. But it's like I want to see those two characters kind of have kind of a payoff because I'd spent enough time learning about them and I want to see where this goes. But it was kind of weird. It felt, you know, you were saying about the way that Tirana and Saru feel kind of like two strangers. That's how this kind of felt, too.
Yeah, I think one of the issues, though, and this is why it's such a shame, you know, we have the first, like, trans character who's presented as such in Star Trek history. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I'll be completely honest. I don't think Ian Alexander has the acting chops that Blue Del Zorro does. Like, I just think that he is not as good of an actor as they are a performer. And it just seems very one-sided, where I'm much more invested in the Adira character and have no investment in the Gray character, because I just don't think he's a very good actor. It's just unfortunate that like Star Trek's about like progress, and I think it was a casting misfire in this situation. And like I say this as a very progressive person, and like I don't want to feel like I'm walking on eggshells here, but I just don't think Ian Alexander has the acting chops to pull off this character and make me invested in this relationship.
I also don't know how invested the show was in Gray.
Yeah.
Because obviously the transition storyline was obviously very meaningful to a lot of people. And, you know, was that season three or four?
Season four.
But like this character, we've talked about it. They never established the constitution of the character early on. The character just got kind of almost unceremoniously sent off to Trill. I don't think that Gray is going to play a big presence this season. It just feels like for a character that they should have really been like, we need to make this character work because this is important. It feels like it's a character they often kind of like tossed around and weren't 100% sure what to do with.
Well, the other thing is, I'll bring it over to Adira as well. Like, I agree with what you're saying. So we're on the Trill home planet. They still haven't done anything at all that really acknowledges or anything really interesting with regards to Adira being like a human carrying a Trill symbiont. You know, we did that like way back in the first episode in which they were introduced, Forget Me Not. And then from like, Cam, do we get like, you know how Jadzia would always talk about her previous hosts? Like Tobin was always nervous on starships, but like, we don't get any of that with Adira whatsoever. And so Adira, they're now back on the Trill home planet. Again, we don't have anything interesting going on with that character and their connection to having a symbiont within their belly.
No, it's entirely driven by the Gray reunion. And I've been a little frustrated with what they've done with Adira, even like last season, where it's like, they were like, okay, we have the whole makeshift family unit with Stamets and Culber, but it was like, give this character more. This is a young person on Star Trek Discovery, a ship that's been through a lot. Like, I don't feel like they've really given us enough of that character's journey. If you're going to introduce them as a ongoing main credit presence on the show, like, do more. Do a little more. Like, I know it's the Michael Burnham show, but I feel like I spend a lot of time with characters who have prominent billing on the show that I really don't know that much about.
Okay. Well, Cam, we're now in kind of that DS9 facets territory. When they have that ritual in which you can transfer one, kind of the consciousness of one host into the body of another person here. I'll just say this. Nothing beats Odo as Curzon Dax. And so as much as, you know, when Hugh Culber was giving it his all when it came to Janelle, you got nothing on Rene Auberjonois from that episode like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Did you laugh at the "this guy really works out" line?
I absolutely 100% laughed at that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Was that a demand by the actor?
Yeah, he had that written to his contract.
I smiled because it felt like Wilson Cruz. There was a knowing wink at that one.
Yeah, but the problem is, okay, so unless you follow his Instagram, do you think the average viewer knows how ripped this guy is?
No.
In real life.
Yeah, I know. That felt like an in-joke.
Yeah. So, Cam, if I was an actor on Star Trek, walking around that uniform all the time, they could have written that line for me. And people would have just gone like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, he is ripped. But, like, I don't know, like you'd really have to, like, follow Wilson Cruz's Instagram account to know just how ripped he is.
Yeah. He makes it very clear. He does a lot of work, that man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, we've got the ceremony going on. We jump over there back to the Federation Starbase. We've got this kind of council. You know, obviously there's votes. They're down with Saru's plan, and that's when we were cornered. Vulcan political operator corners Saru and is like, ooh, you can make the appearance of your engagement, you know, would not be in the best interest of President Tarina. And Saru's like, oh dear. I think it just kind of reveals how A, naive Saru is about politics, and then B, how naive he is about relationships, and that instead of talking to Tarina about this immediately after and being directly and saying like, hey, I'm uncertain about what, you know, this guy just told me, Like, he's just kind of pussyfooting around saying, like, oh, maybe we should just not put that that engagement notice out on Facebook.
That felt like the type of decision he might make if this was a new relationship, but they've been together for quite a while, so that's why it felt odd to me.
Yeah, it just felt kind of, like I said, like a little naive on his part. Like, or, you know, I should say too naive on his part.
It did, and then when they actually sit down and have a talk, he's like, oh, we're going to have conflict occasionally? And I'm like, really? Like, yeah. How long have these two been together?
Also, how old is Saru? Like, he's probably, if I had to do some rough math in my head based on some of that short track sort of stuff, he's at least in his 30s, you know? He's probably closer to his 40s, I would guess.
Yeah, I don't know how Kelpians age.
True, yeah.
It's kind of like the Klingon thing, where you look older when you're young, perhaps. I don't really know.
Yeah. Okay, so then we jump over to the quarry stuff. You know, we've seen that quarry many a time in Discovery. You know, essentially they're there so Janelle can say, like, I need to do this whole walk so that we can ensure that whoever the puzzle solvers are worthy seekers of this progenitor technology. And like, okay. And then also there's scary noises from Starship Trooper bugs coming out in the background there. So
I thought that's where the murder hornets went.
Yeah. I kind of like the sequence in which Rayner's like meeting all the crew and
yep.
He just does not give an F. And like, I kind of don't blame him. You know, like I if I was Rayner, I'd be happy to read up on all of their files, and then when the mission is no longer critical, take a little bit more time to get them on a more personal level here. But I did find this sequence amusing at the very least. Some good Linus talk, at least when he was talking about like procreation among Saurians.
I actually really enjoyed this sequence. It may be my favorite part of the whole episode because it just felt like, first off, it's funny and it's just interesting to have these various characters come in and talk to Rayner, and it taught us a little bit about Rayner and the way he deals with people. And a lot of the humor also came from Mary Wiseman's facial reactions to what he was saying and doing. I think it could have benefited if we knew the characters a little better, because we obviously know Linus, but then there's like the one that comes in and is like, I'm called the Bluff Master.
I know.
I have no idea who this person is. This means nothing.
That's the dumbest nickname like ever. So like Cam, on the show Lost, Sawyer was always known for coming up with like fun, cheeky nicknames for all the characters. But there's this one character whose nose was broken. And people were making fun of the nickname, like on the internet, making fun of the nickname, where they started calling him Sawyer called him Broken Nose Man. Hmm. And it was just like, I think you can come up with something better than Bluff Master when it comes to Tongo.
That's pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yeah. But yeah. Like, it's sequences like this where I'm like, where were like moments like that last season, which so much of it felt like kind of a slog? It's like those little sparks of comic energy add a lot. And that was the same with Jet Reno appearing earlier in the episode as well.
Yeah, I like this sequence here. This is pretty, I think, like you, this is probably the highlight of the episode for me. And again, it's more that hangout factor where you're just sitting there and getting to know the dynamic of this new main character on the show.
I would have loved if they'd walked in Dr. Kovich to have a 20-word meeting with him.
That would be great, too. Okay, so now we got a breakup scene between Gray and Adira. Seemed like a long time coming. Again, just like naivete of Adira, you know, like these long distance relationships, how often do they really work?
Yeah. And it also felt like the show just putting finality on them going their separate ways, because they kind of just sent Gray off to this Trill planet. And so I guess we can just move forward now. I mean, it was a nice enough scene of the two of them deciding to go their different paths, but it didn't pack the emotional punch you kind of hoped for.
Yeah, but the thing is, I was never invested in them anyway, and I don't think there would have been any emotional punch for me to have.
Yeah, no, true.
So, now we get back onto the Trill planets, walking through the canyon. We've got the Starship Trooper bugs appearing, and Janelle hightails it out of there. I love it. It's like I was watching Scooby-Doo with like how he runs away from the frightening action sequence that's about to unfold there. Yeah. So, you know, then the next sequence, again, I guess it's like Tilly giving Rainer a piece of his mind after Stamets walks in and is super excited about the mission, and then Rainer still just can't give an F there. Here's the deal. This is what I expected to happen the entire time with Tilly hanging around, and she was going to school Rainer on interpersonal skills. And in my head, I'm just like, well, how does this guy become a captain? Mm-hmm. You know, how is he a leader for so long without ever understanding, like, just some basic leadership qualities? And, like, I'm just wondering, like, does he really need, like, Tilly to help him? Like, I don't know. Just this whole sequence, where this was going in this episode, this little, like, C story, D story, it just seemed very predictable about where the eventuality was going to be.
Well, like, were the crew of his previous ship, like, very unhappy? Because, like, this show, like, what they're showing us in this episode would indicate is that this man is terrible with people. And, like, were the crew of his previous ship, like, really, was it very low morale going on? Like, we never got that indication.
Is he the Captain Jellicoe of his time?
I guess so. I guess that's kind of what they're doing. Although I feel like Jellicoe's crew are probably happier than the people potentially working for this man.
Yeah. I still like Rainer. I just don't want them to soften his edges too much as the season progresses.
Oh, he's going to be cheering with that bridge crew by the end of the season. You watch.
He's going to be crying his eyes out by episode 7. Yeah. Okay, Cam, we're now back on the Starship Trooper bug action sequence. I guess Burnham and Book figure, yeah, they can't actually solve the puzzle today, just like Janelle said, and they're going to beam away, but I guess the minerals in the canyon won't let them do that. And so, they take away their phasers. Book does his courier. No, I guess he's not from a courier planet, but whatever that planet was that he's from, with the space locust, ate up so much of it. But he does that sort of like magic power sort of dealio there, talks to the bugs, just like he was with some of those. They weren't space whales, were they? Like in season 3, but they're some sort of like alien species.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't remember what they look like, though.
Like, didn't they dump them into the
ocean?
Or did they find them in space and then put them in the, like, I remember there was like drone footage of them like going over like a lake or something like that.
Well, that's the episode shot in Iceland, right?
No, this was about halfway through season 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Possibly.
Well, anyways, he has the ability to talk to the animals. They tell him, hey, we come in peace. And then, you know, it's the Star Trek thing to do. And that's when Janelle, who's just hanging out, filing his nails, staring at the stars, as he says. Although, do you notice that there were no stars up in the sky at that moment? It was just cloudy, yes. Blue sky. It was twilight.
Yeah, they could have added those stars. Yeah. They didn't bother. Yeah, this felt like a little bit of a devil in the dark kind of moment to me as well, where it's like,
yeah, just protecting the eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, you're all decent people, so sure, I'll give you the clue.
So, like, I'm very impressed that this clue is left intact underneath like a rock for almost 1,000 years. Like, Janelle must have been like very, very confident about where he hid it.
Yeah. Well, wasn't the marking on the rock though just a complete like red herring?
That was,
yeah.
But he had it in his hand underneath like this other rock, like when they came back for him.
Right,
like,
right.
How did he know that there's not going to be like a condo development that would have eventually gone up in that specific spot there?
I mean, I feel like those murder hornets would have kept condo developers away.
You know what? That's a good point.
Yeah. Don't you think it's odd, though, that there was never a moment on DS9 where Jadzia was like, you know, I remember riding on the murder hornets in my home planet of Trill. Like, it seems like the kind of thing you'd bring up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, I mean, you know, like, Cam, it's not as if you ride on, like, tigers. So, you know, maybe that's why she never brought it up.
But it's like, imagine if we had, like, tigers running around in the wild like this. And then I met someone from another planet. And I would never bring this up, even though they're going to, like, I don't know. It just seems to me like the kind of thing that people might know about Trill.
But she may not have grown up on that part of Trill, which has a giant land surface, as Tilly established earlier on in the episode.
Yeah, so you're saying Jadzia didn't live in the rock quarry.
Yes. She was waiting for the condo development. You know, it never sprung up, so she had to live somewhere else.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
All right. So then after this, you know, Janelle says, you're worthy. We're back to the Saru Trina thing where I'm like, yeah. This whole exchange is like, yes, I knew this is exactly where we'd end up. You know, it just seems very like by the numbers, like, okay, we need to show our work when it comes to showcasing conflict between these two characters. But nothing about this seems particularly like subversive in how you do drama or anything like that. It just seems like, oh, I could have predicted every moment beat by beat.
I think they were just trying to like parallel a relationship with the Adira and Gray one. And it's like one relationship that continues to move forward, even though there's struggles, and one that goes their separate paths. But yeah, I can't say I got a lot out of the Saru Tarina resolution to this one.
Yeah. Okay. So the we're back in the underground caves, as opposed to the overground caves. redundant there. But the ritual is over. You know, Hugh has his own consciousness back at the forefront. Sounds like it was a bit of a ketamine trip for him. then we go up to the Discovery Lounge. Of course, if you have a Ferengi officer, he's the one who's going to be pouring, it looked like soda pop.
Root beer.
You know, it looked more like Mountain Dew, I should say. Okay. In this situation. Yeah. But, you know, Rainer and Tilly have a heart to heart. It turns out Rainer just never knew he needed interpersonal skills, you know, despite being a captain for X number of years. But Tilly, the young lieutenant, is there to school him on the ways of Starfleet.
Are they going to pair these two off, do you think, through the season?
I could see that. I wouldn't necessarily mind that, but I would like it for Tilly to have something to learn from Rainer rather than her just like schooling him on interpersonal skills the whole time.
I hope through the Starfleet Academy TV show, she just keeps saying, you know, my friend Rainer once taught me ...
Yeah. Okay. So then we jump over to Burnham and Hugh kind of talking about his own experience about how he's kind of a little detached. Like he was watching everything unfolds. Like his consciousness was there, but not in control of his body. And he kept saying like, it's just, how is this even scientifically possible? Science cannot explain this ritual. And in my head, I was just like, are you sure science can't, you know?
I think the trill's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm sure it's scientifically explainable.
Yeah.
You know? And so eventually, I don't know, you get to Burnham kind of saying like, okay, like, look, this tech is the closest we'll ever get to the beings that created life. So getting to the end of this journey, we'll find the answers we need. And so she was trying to kind of bounce off his uncertainty with maybe there's the potential for more certainty moving forward. Cam, what did Janelle, okay, here's what, maybe I missed something really obvious here. Like, Janelle knows that this technology is very important. Does Janelle know what the technology is, or just does he know that there's progenitor technology here?
They do know what it is because they referenced how like a member of the group that found it died, and so they hid it away because it was so dangerous.
So why doesn't he just tell them what the technology is?
Well, because they can't reveal fully what the technology is yet, Tyler. It's only episode 3.
Did you notice nobody asked him what it is?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I was just like, this just seems like a very obvious, you know, okay. We were watching season 2 of Discovery, and I think there's that whole writer's room-itis that overcame everybody, in which they knew what the motives were of everybody, but they never explained something very basic as to why Starfleet thought it was so important that Pike jump over to another ship to seek out the mystery of the Red Angels. Mm-hmm. He just said, Starfleet has ordered me to look for the mystery of the Red Angels, but they never explained why that it was important. And the writers knew why, but they never explained to the audience. And I think it was the same thing with the constitution of Gray. Like Gray's just appearing intermittently in front of Adira, but they never explained why Gray was there. Is Gray a ghost? Is Gray part of Adira's subconscious? No, it appears that Gray's some, like, I don't get it. I still don't get it. Like it's his own, like, consciousness floating around Adira he got a head injury, and then they had to put the symbiont into Adira, and then suddenly Gray was just, Gray's consciousness was floating around intermittently around Adira. Like, I'm still confused, and we're in season five, and this happened in season three.
I have no answers. I think we're going to have to read the, like, I'm sure the Memory Alpha page lays it out or something like that based on, or the Memory Beta page lays it out. But, yeah, it's something that they've skipped all over without ever giving answers. It's so funny that you have, you know, Burnham searching for meaning and answers. And I'm like, well, I think a lot of the viewers are, too, in terms of a lot of the complications that you guys keep injecting into your series.
I do remember going onto Memory Alpha maybe last year, trying to see if they explained what the constitution of Gray was, and no, there's no explanation.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, so it wasn't just me missing it. It was just the writers never explained it. And maybe the writers know in their heads, but I think the thing is, you just get kind of stuck in, like, you're aware of how everything adds up, but you forget that other people aren't. So that's a little bit of frustration there. Speaking of Gray, I'm going to read a little something to you, Cam.
Uh-oh.
We must choose to connect, not just with others, but also with ourselves. Sometimes we fail, sometimes we succeed. Either way, we must keep trying because we have to, because we are all looking for meaning in our lives. Cam, that is so deep. That is just, that's so totally not high school journaling right there. It is so totally not the writers trying to wrap up some sort of theme within this episode, because they didn't really want to leave it off with everybody getting drunk at a bar at the end of the episode. It just, this galaxy-brained nonsense just irks me so much. We got it at the start of last week's episode too, or I should say Under the Twin Moons. That episode started with one of those, like, very kind of flowery captain's logs that Burnham was doing. Mm-hmm. And again, we're coming back to, like, connection. I'm just like, discovery, you gotta, Cam, what are the chances that we hear some variation of this whole connection theme in the series finale in a couple weeks?
Well, if you've got your Discovery bingo cards out, you can cross off connection and now keep your ears open for tether and communication.
Okay. Well, I'm down for that. I know we kind of took jabs at this episode. I think this episode is fine. You know, like, it, or maybe I should say it's fine for the last couple seasons of Discovery. You know, I don't feel as frustrated as I was in previous Mystery Box seasons. You know, I think this Mystery Box, it's not frustrating me the way that others were. I'm trying to pinpoint exactly why, but I think it's because you don't end every episode going dun dun dun, and it's more like we're taking more time to hang out with the characters without it feeling like a slog. Like, last season just felt like a super, super long slog, and so far I'm not getting that sense, and I just wonder how much a 10 episode run versus like 13 to 15 episodes is really helping the show in its final season.
I think it's also just a tone thing. Because, like, these episodes, the first three, have been quite light. You know, there's some serious stuff in this episode in terms of character relationships, but it never feels like it's kind of moody and downbeat. And I think that helps it a lot in terms of just being very watchable. This one, to me, this is pretty mediocre. I think it felt a lot like just a connecting the pieces kind of episode for me that Star Trek Discovery so often does. We didn't even get a piece of the, you know, whatever the artifact. We just got a clue to it. And so I guess we're going to be doling out clues and pieces in coming episodes. I just hope, like, we don't have a lot more episodes of, like, we're going to go to a planet, deal with some sort of, like, you know, some sort of obstacle that we have to overcome and learn a lesson to get a piece and move on to the next one. Because that could feel really repetitive if we do, like, five of those.
Cam, I think you're predicting how the season's going to unfold.
I suspect as well. Like, I'm fearful of that, but hopefully, like, okay, give me more scenes like Rayner talking to crew members.
Yeah.
And less of some of the, far less scenes of Saru in a room talking to Tarina about their relationship and politics.
If I had to rank the first three episodes of season five, I'd rank episode one first, episode two second, and episode three third.
Yeah. Same here.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I think that wraps it up for this one, of Star Trek Discovery. I just do want to point out, red herrings. The reason they're called red is because smoked herring is red, And smoked herring was what they used to kind of keep like foxes away from rabbits, you know, the smell of it. So that's why they're called red herrings.
The more you know.
Yeah,
yeah. So, okay. You if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. And of course, leave reviews for us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Voyager Took Nilsson Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R. R as in radio drama. E, P. P as in podcast drama. O, R. R is in radio drama, T-O-N.
Okay, so and of course we'll be back with episode 4 of Discovery Season 5, Mirrors. But until then, the arena is closed.
A radio drama. Dear Lord.
A podcast drama. And
nobody calls it a podcast drama. They're called podcasts.
Whatever.